Everything begins with a story, says Joseph Campbell, who spent his life studying stories. Genesis is the story that describes the beginning of everything we know. He writes this: people say that what we're all seeking is a meaning for life. I don't think that's what we're really seeking. I think what we're seeking is an experience of being alive, so that our life experiences will have resonance within our own innermost being and reality, so that we actually feel the rapture of being alive. And that's what these stories help us to find. So the writer of Genesis and our psalmist today wrote what they wrote because they looked at a sunset or up in the night sky or mountains or canyons, and they feel something come alive deep down in their spine. There's a longing, a connection with the creator who made everything, who's the source of our life, and maybe even clues to how to live it. And they are so moved by what they feel that they try to put it into words. But according to John Walton, who studied ancient cultures, he says Genesis doesn't just describe things coming into existence. Rather, it's about why things came into existence. Because in the ancient mind, if things exist, they exist for a reason. It's what my nephew Micah wanted to know when he was six or so. We were eating in a restaurant, and when suddenly he noticed that there's a skylight in the ceiling above the middle of our table. So he said, "Why?" Now, around this time, my brother can do like two whys before it rubs on his last nerve. So when Micah asked the third why, my brother said, "Ask your uncle." Well, I live for explaining things. So I improvise a TED talk on why, in the middle of the space, you might want to let light in, why you might want to vent out hot air or oily smoke or smell. And by the end of my uncle splaining, Micah looked satisfied and his eyes went off somewhere far away into deep thoughts. Micah's mind is the mind of the writer of Genesis. He's not content to know that something exists just because he can see it and feel it. For the ancient mind, that doesn't qualify as existence. He wants to know why it exists. What is its purpose? And so in Genesis 1, God doesn't just speak things into being. He spoke and assigned them their purpose. That things don't just sit and look pretty. They also do something. Something ordained by God and plays a part in the bigger thing that God is doing. And we can see that in Psalm 104, it is inspired by the creation story in Genesis 1, because the poet talks about things in the same order as they are presented in the days of creation. But what the poet does is to turn the Genesis story into ballet. So on the first day in Genesis, God made light and dark functional into daytime and nighttime. And the psalmist has the light wrapping around God like what that gymnast does with that long ribbon on a stick, and the night sky doing yoga poses, stretching and stretching out to cover the light. So verse 2, the Lord wraps himself in light as with a garment. He stretches out the heavens like a tent. The purpose of day and night is that the cycle of light and dark is essential to the rhythm of life. The cycle of light and dark is how a tomato knows to ripen. In the Canadian North and Nordic countries, for example, there are 50 days in the summer when it doesn't get dark. And people who visit during that time find that they can't sleep and their mind starts thinking weird thoughts. And doctors have discovered that we can actually die if we go a week without sleep because toxins collect in our brains. God made day and night to support the biorhythm of human life and life in creation. On the second day of Genesis, the creation in Genesis, God made a space to separate the waters of outer space, because that's what ancient people thought outer space was, and the water of the ocean. The purpose of the space is for us and all air-breathing creatures to live in and also to contain the weather. We are seeing firsthand what happens when the weather becomes uncontained. Like a week ago, when a couple of weeks ago, Manhattan ground to a halt because all the subway stations were underwater. And we're seeing more and more worrying weather all over the world because of climate change, which we didn't account for when we built cities too near water. But here's the psalmist picturing God put in beams and columns to support our air gap for life, and clouds and wind and lightning just running loose around the new space like the way kids do when they get to the playground. So here's verse 3. God lays the beams of his upper chambers on the waters. He makes the clouds his chariots and rides on the wings of the wind. He makes winds his messengers, flames of fire his servants. He set the earth on its foundation. It can never be moved. You covered it with watery depths as with a garment, and the waters stood above the mountains. In Egypt, every year, starting in July, the Nile would flood. But by September, the water would recede, leaving very fertile strips of land on either side of the river. And that's where the Egyptians grow their food that they need. And you can almost picture the receding of water on the third day of creation when dry ground appears. The God-given purpose of the dry, fertile ground is so it can grow food to sustain life. So here's the psalmist dramatizing this moment in his ballet. Verse 7, at your rebuke, the waters fled. At the sound of your thunder, they took to flight. They flowed over the mountains. They went down the valleys to the place where you assigned them. You set a boundary that they cannot cross. Never again will they cover the earth. And then the psalmist just keeps going like this. The sun and the moon and the stars given their purposes on day 4, which governs the rhythm of annual calendar festivals, when to plant, when to harvest, and sailors use stars for navigation. And then on day 5, God filled the sky and sea with creatures and gave them the purpose to multiply and populate those spaces. And then on day 6, God filled the land with creatures. And unlike all other creation stories in the world, the climax of the Genesis creation story is when God made human beings. And unlike other land creatures, humans are made according to God's image, that we have a God-given purpose, which is to emulate God in creation, in creativity, in caring for creation, in making choices that bless the world and sustain the flourishing of life. And at the end of the 6th day, God assigned foods to all the living creatures, and then he gave everything a once-over and declared everything very good, because everything that is needed to sustain life has been assigned their purposes. It's all systems go. Verse 24, how many are your works, Lord? In wisdom, you made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. And then on the 7th Genesis day, God enters a Sabbath, which John Walton says is a temple. It is God's office, as it were. So God settles into the desk, the chair at his desk, and he lets creation run under his watchful supervision. And because God is God and we're not, and because God is the one running the world and we don't have to, God did all this so we can rest and play and just live our lives as God's image bearers. We live our God-given purposes with how God made us, and we leave to God what is over our pay grade, like the eradication of evildoers. So the psalmist ends up with 33, I will sing to the Lord all my life. I will sing praise to my God as long as I live. May my meditation be pleasing to him as I rejoice in the Lord. But may sinners vanish from the earth and the wicked be no more. Praise the Lord, my soul. The therapist, Esther Perel, says when she hears patients say that they just want their kids to be happy, she would ask, what about healthy? What about becoming people of character? Because happy is not a thing we feel for no reason. It's the byproduct of something else, like when things are going well, when we get good news, or like when we have a purpose and we're figuring out how to live our purpose. Genesis tells us that the world as God made it is not just pretty, but it's also purposeful. And God invites us not only to see the ways we're beautifully made, but also purposefully made to live the life God made for us to live. And that's how we experience a meaningful life. So, as I sit with God and chat about the psalm over coffee and cookies, I find myself asking myself, how do I feel about the amount of life I'm living at the moment? Is it enough? Am I content? Or do I want more? Am I seeing more of what God sees when he looks at me, the good he invested in me when he made me? Or do I focus on what I'm not, what I think I lack, and being discouraged by what I see? And how am I being, living God's design of me? What purpose am I living out at this moment? A purpose that aligns with my talents and gifts? A purpose doing what I enjoy that gives life to my soul when I'm doing it? And not just me, but a purpose that creates blessings in the world. I have to admit that as I continue to navigate pandemic life, I did not immediately welcome it when God wanted to talk about my purpose. Somehow, the word purpose sounds like to me that I need to have something to show to justify my existence, which at the moment feels a little overwhelming when I have my hands full. Unless, what if my purpose is just to be the person God made me? And just blessing the world by being myself, as fully as I know myself to be, with the Spirit's help, in the circumstances I find myself in. Because as I chew on these questions, I'm not who I used to be. I'm no longer that youngster whose life is all possibilities ahead of me, all the time in the world to try things out and to find myself and all the energy to chase something uphill. The reality is that I'm older than I've ever been, more frail, more fallible, less energetic than I've ever been. I carry more grief from losses and battle scars and mistakes and failures. But, well, while I might think I'm less good than I was because of wear and tear, the psalm reminds me that I'm still the person God made, wonderfully and beautifully. If anything, I have only become more fully human with age. And God is not done with me living purposefully as I be me in my current state of humanity. It used to be that a lot of what they sell on TV is really to help older people live on their own, even though they don't say it. Like, you know, choppers and cookers. But now there are things for all ages, things that promise to improve us in the way we feel not good enough, that our lives are not good enough until we buy into the things they're selling us. So right now, the world seems obsessed with life hacks. Pop culture says if we want to come alive, if we want to feel more alive, then we first need to do things to, quote, upgrade our mind and body and soul with newfangled diets and exercise and mindful meditation and tracking phone apps. This came into my box this week. It says AI, artificial intelligence, has the potential to increase human potential and multiply it by infinity. Infinity, not just smarter and faster, but infinitely smarter and faster, which would make us gods, right? The self-help good news of our age is not content with God offering to heal us and restore us to be more fully the person God made us, like fixing up an old house with good bones. Instead, they want to tear the whole thing down, promising to improve on even God's design of us by helping us tap into some infinite inner potential. And when we finally have perfected ourselves, then and only then, we will become alive and happy. And since we cannot actually get there, we become mice trapped running in that wheel of self-improvement. And I hear God through this psalm reminding me that human beings don't need upgrading from being human beings. God's good news is not about upgrading the quality of my life with health and wealth beyond the challenges and realities of being human, at least not the side of heaven. Christian spirituality is not about upgrading us from being merely human, says Kate Bowler in her new book, There's No Cure to Being Human. Spiritual, it's about living life with God as the frail human being. It's not a shortcut around the limits of being human. She writes this, the world says you can have it all if you just learn how to conquer your limits. There's infinity lurking somewhere at the bottom of your inbox or in the stack of self-help books on the bedside table. It taunts you as you grip the steering wheel in traffic, attempting your new breathing practice, or in the pre-dawn minutes when you could be working out. We're not designed to be superhumans, and the gospel is not God offering to make us into superhumans. Henry Cloud says maturity is the process of properly realizing what our real limits are. One of the reasons the current James Bond is retiring is because he keeps injuring himself doing make-believe superhuman stunts. And they say in Asia, after magazines printed the picture of the prettiest face in the world, young women are beginning to all look alike because they all get plastic surgery to look like that face. And men all over the world are imitating actors who get up at 5 every morning to grueling workouts because they want superhero abs. And even I fell into that spell when I heard someone say, I'd be healthier if I get jacked. Well, I ended up hurting my shoulders and I couldn't work out at all for 2 weeks. Thinking we're not good enough and need to work at being better just leaves us feeling dissatisfied with our lives all the time. We become our worst critics with unkind self-judgment, as if the way God made us is not enough for us. And this happens in our relationship with God too. When we look to the Bible for upgrade blessing formulas to get more wealth and more health and more success, as if struggle is unspiritual. But what if Bible stories are less about improving our quality of life, less about figuring how to get God to bless us in the way we want, and more about the way God keeps loving us as his masterpieces in all the ways we stumble about? We cannot upgrade our lives. We can only live them as us, says Kate Bowler, because there are things we cannot control that come at us. They challenge us to keep trusting and relying on God, who promises to help us to find a way through and create purpose and meaning as we do. So she tells a story of her getting unhinged at the hospital gift shops with all these self-help books, like the one from this popular TV preacher from Florida, giving the steps to achieve, quote, our best life now. Implying if we struggle with depression or illness or adverse circumstances, we're doing something wrong because that's not the life God promises us, they say. So here's Bowler, 35 years old, in the hospital being treated for terminal cancer and trying to process the prognosis that she might die within 2 years. This is her life that she's trying to come to terms with, death and uncertainty, And she's upset because the pastor's recipe for best life now is unimaginable and untenable. He makes her feel like a spiritual failure. She writes this: every year, billions of dollars are pumped into a wellness industry defined by the theory that we can be perfected. We can organize ourselves, heal ourselves, budget ourselves, love ourselves, track ourselves, and eat well enough to make ourselves whole. Its promises were bold and metaphysical, insisting the mind could overcome the sins of the therapeutic age, low self-esteem, mediocrity, and a ho-hum existence. Everyone is now an evangelist of good, better, best. Harness your mind to change your circumstances. Salvation is only one decision away. But I cannot outwork or outpace or outpray my cancer. I cannot dispel it with a can-do attitude. After a diagnosis, after a pandemic, that's the right time to question our popular theories about how to build a better life. We cannot have it all if we just learn how to conquer our limits. The problem with our lives is that we cannot solve them. We can only live them. Instead of my best life now, I will have to settle into life now. The Genesis story says, instead of working at upgrading ourselves from human beings to become spiritual superheroes, we might want to instead just see the good in us as we are, the way God made us, and then find a purpose that suits us and where we are and who we are at the moment with our situations and challenges. For Kate Bowler, her life is someone trying to live her faith as a mother and wife and history professor and cancer patient. And her purpose is to bless people with her writings and podcasts, people who are trying to make sense of faith in their circumstances, as she lives honestly being herself. She blesses people. Ted Lasso is a wildly popular show on Apple TV about this college professor who, or college football coach who knows nothing about soccer, being hired to coach a professional soccer team in England. The show grew out of a gag. When NBC got the rights to show European soccer, they asked this comedian to write a promo. And this guy thought it would be funny to have this made-up American football coach who knew nothing about soccer to do commentary. It was so funny that they made it into a whole show. It's a fish-out-of-water story. The team owner was counting on him to fail, but somehow he found success by applying his upbeat little league coaching philosophy in the cutthroat world of pro sports. Even the creators of the show can't believe how much people have fallen in love with their made-up coach. When fans were asked why they loved the show, the top three responses were joy, possibilities, and kindness. The writer said they simply set out to create a typical kind Midwestern good-natured man and put him into unfamiliar surroundings and imagine his impact on the people around him when he's just being himself. Like when he helped two players who hated each other to find a way to let go of grudges and get along on and off the field. And the writer said, when did forgiveness become a superhero power? Imagine that we live in a time when the thing that people find most inspiring is someone who blesses people just by being their kind nature self. One of the two guys who won the Nobel Prize for medicine last week says he didn't set out to win the Nobel Prize. He tells a story about walking through the supermarket and then became curious about why peppers are hot and mint is cold. And his research to satisfy his curiosity led to identifying the genes in us and the pathways behind the way we feel pain. So there may be a natural way to manage chronic pain without addictive painkillers, which is amazing to him because when he started, he didn't even know if his research would amount to anything useful, he said. The reporter asked him to describe the eureka moment. And he talked about coming alive with excitement when a scan showed the molecule that up until that moment, he had only imagined existed in his head. He is living his purpose by being his natural, curious self, and he's blessing the world just by being himself. The purpose God gave us when he made us, the way to come alive with God's help, begins with embracing who we are as God made us. The good he invested in us, and then to make blessings in the world by just being who we are. No more, no less. So we're in the time of the year when trees enter the slow season of their God-given purpose. They will absorb all the green stuff from the leaves, the stuff that do the hard work of turning sunlight into food, leaving the leaves naked in their red and yellow and purple and brown underwear before they all fall off. And then the trees will take a time out over the winter to do some soul searching, imagining how they will want to come back next spring with new purpose and vigor. So maybe we can follow the trees and take an appreciative look at the person we're becoming. And hopefully we're coming into more fully the person God made and seeing more of the good that God invested in us. And maybe we too can review the purpose we have been living. What things in our lives no longer serve our purpose, and what things to take up going forward that suits a new season of life and our giftedness, so that we will continue to live our purpose with meaning and keep blessing the world. So take a moment and begin a conversation with God, and I'll read you a prayer that came into my mailbox this week. A prayer for our common good. Gracious God, of thy mercy, behold thy children in our need and hurt and want. By thy Spirit, call us together to love peace and serve liberation and practice justice as we share thy gifts until blessing flows for all. Amen.